Hold on to your butts, it's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die! Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. And we're back with episode 85 of Destroy All Culture with Aiden Morgan and me, Adam P. Nave.
Hi-dee-ho.
Hello. Hello.
Oh, we're back to that arm. Hello.
As soon as I said hello, I was like, oh, wait, shouldn't that be hello?
It should.
Right. So, bunch of stuff this week, but we should start before we even talk about the episode itself with the fact that Killjoys did get a renewal for two seasons. Yes. They will be the final two seasons, which sounds kind of sad until you remember that, you know, they'd originally talked about doing a 5-year run. So,
yeah, and I think that's, frankly, I love it when shows go out strong and tell a story they want to tell and not do like a 6th season of Supernatural. Just by way of example.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, it lets them tell their story. It'll be 50 episodes in total for the show, which is, you know, technical for syndication is not there, but
we'll always have Blu-ray / the internet.
Yeah, and I wonder if the syndication stuff even has changed a little bit recently, given all of that.
Yeah, I think streaming services seem to disrupt that whole thing, as they say. Because, I mean, for example, I mean, I have Crave TV, which is part of a Canadian cable package deal. But you can get it independent of a cable package. And, I mean, they just stream shows on there. And, like, for example, right. Killjoys is there. So presumably at some point, if Crave lasts and, you know, the world doesn't collapse, you could have all 5 seasons of Killjoys.
Just, right, yeah, I think it's that sort of thing that, like, it'll just happen. It's a little weird. It'll come back on TV every now and then.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of straight syndication.
But
of course,
curious, so I'm gonna Google that to see if...
Yeah, because, I mean, I know the old rule used to be 100, but... Yeah. Anyway, Winona Earp, of course, was also renewed. Sadly, Dark Matter was not.
Nope.
Now, I say sadly, I know neither of us really enjoy the show.
No, that is true.
But it has its fans, and, you know, they just had a show that they like removed from them, so that's, you know, you feel bad for them.
I do. I don't want anybody to have things they like taken away from them.
Right, and you don't want, like, you know, again, like, there's a bunch of people who are now out of jobs. Like, there's no real upside for this.
Right.
And we certainly won't make fun of the dead. But the reason I dug into it some, because I was curious, because, frankly, Dark Matter gets better ratings than Killjoys.
That's kind of what I thought.
And so it's like, well, now hold on here. What it came down to, apparently, as far as I can figure out, Killjoys is wholly owned and produced by Space.
Okay.
It's Canadian. It's done by you guys.
Yep, we do Killjoys.
Winona Earp, I believe, is completely the Sci-Fi Network. And we pay for all of that.
Right.
Dark Matter was co-owned.
Okay.
By Space and Sci-Fi. So I think what it came down to was Sci-Fi was happy to do Winona Earp because it makes some money and you know, has a huge vocal, very large fan base.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why it gets the early renewals, too, is because Sci-Fi gets to make that choice by itself.
Oh.
But for Killjoys, Space has to make the choice. And for Dark Matter, both networks had to make the choice. And as far as I can tell, Sci-Fi wanted to pump. They have a whole new, like, supernatural type fantasy sort of lineup coming.
Right.
And they were pumping the money into that.
Instead of science.
So it kind of just came out that, like, Dark Matter, because it had to report to two masters, kind of got squelched in the shuffle.
Well, shucks.
Yeah, I mean, they're looking at, you know, Netflix, which is nowadays, like, the thing that everyone does. It's like, well, our show isn't there. Let's move to Netflix. And you know, Netflix has a petition for this, apparently. They do. They actually have a form for, like, we'd like you to pick up this show now.
Wow.
And if it gets enough signatures and all this, they'll consider it.
And I think, I'm not sure how much Dark Matter costs per episode. I mean, it is science fiction, and those often can be a little more expensive, but it's a lot of sort of, it looks like regular sets that they reuse.
Yeah, I mean, they were saying like it's not a very expensive show.
Okay, yeah, that's because I mean it is a lot of people standing around in rooms telling each other the plot, so that's not too expensive.
Yeah, and that's because of money issues, and it's like, yeah. Killjoys isn't usually very expensive either for the same reason.
Right.
But I think it was one of those space was behind it, and probably behind Dark Matter. But I think sci-fi was just like, we want to pump our money into something new.
Right.
And sci-fi, for good or ill, has that habit of canceling shows around season 3 to get the new shiny thing in.
Right.
I am, of course, instantly reminded, because we can't discuss science fiction TV without bringing up Farscape, of the great Farscape debacle, which is now having worries about Killjoys, by the way.
Oh.
Even though it's not the same situation. But, Farscape, after season 3, got a renewal for 2 seasons.
That's right.
For seasons 4 and 5. Except they had a German production company. Because Farscape was a weird mix of international companies.
Yeah.
But it had like 4 different companies involved. And the German company that did like all their post-production FX stuff suddenly raised its prices after season 4, going, well, we're guaranteed season 5, so let's do that. And Sci-Fi was like, and you're done.
Wow. Not even like, no, maybe could you keep them low because we can't afford that? Just nope, go away.
I don't know how much negotiation there really was, but it always came across as just one of these Sci-Fi just dropped the hammer just because it was like, we gave you a gift, how dare you then try to take advantage of us?
Fair enough.
Which is, it is kind of fair of them, to be, honest. It's just, but, so the minute I hear like, oh, we have a 2-season renewal on a science fiction show on Sci-Fi, I'm like, oh no! Oh no, be careful!
You're doomed. I remember when there used to be so many more of those international co-productions, like when you just needed, just to get the money together for everything. So, and lots of Canadian science fiction shows at the time, they're always German co-productions and
Australian. Yeah, a lot of German co-production for years, and a lot of that's dropped just because no one ever actually made money off of them.
That's what I hear.
And the worst part was, and this is where Sci-Fi, I think, got their kind of their infamy of canceling things weirdly. The problem is that they were always on the hook for a big chunk of it, but not all of it, so they couldn't really recoup. And so they were just left with I guess we get to be the bad parents. Mm. And so then they get known for canceling shows. It's a bad situation. Which is why I think that'll stop, because I think Sci-Fi stopped buying them. Because, and they're kind of right to do it. Because again, if you're just losing money on stuff, how long are you going to keep up doing it?
Right.
So.
Yeah, good. Well said, sir.
Which is actually interesting, because it's kind of the opposite of what's happening in Hollywood with movies. Where a bunch of American companies are, suddenly going, we don't have the money for this, and a bunch of Chinese production companies are coming in.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it seems to me like for a while there, Hollywood had grown adept at finding wealthy investors. And not necessarily movie-savvy investors, but people who wanted to invest their money, be in the pictures and get their money. And I think that it seems to me like that strategy is not paying off, because after you keep on pumping money into films that lose a bunch of money, then you're like, nope, this sounds like a bad deal.
Right. You just stop doing it, which makes some sort of sense.
How'd you like
something
to
I know that Hollywood is not
money.
Known for.
Yeah, indeed. So, and it's funny, a lot of blockbusters, international runs, they often make their money back eventually, but I think there's just sheer prestige involved with domestic box office that, so if they don't, then it's like a black eye, it's shaming, and there's one thing that Hollywood can't stand, it's to be shamed publicly, which it happens.
I think part of the problem is that even though a lot of these movies now will do okay domestic U.S., and then do really good internationally, they're always wary, because it's like, how do you do a sequel since that the U.S. is just going to drop like a stone?
Right. Yeah.
And then you have a hard time convincing theaters to even carry it.
and your DVD sales are going to drop. And it's like, and so it gets harder to convince all the production companies to do this just for this other international market. Because they're like, well, why would we do that instead of just chasing something that'll work for both? So it's this weird problem of like, well, we're still making our money, but we're not making it the way we want, so the hell with you. And again, I do understand the weird issue there. Like, it's a perception thing,
yeah.
But...
But I also like the notion that, well, that'll make us crazy rich, but not crazy, crazy rich, if you know what I mean.
Right. Like, it won't make us crazy rich and well spoken of.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So yeah. But yeah, so we have two seasons left of Killjoys. They are gonna have their ending, they're gonna know what they're doing. And of course this week they also ended the third season.
And with a finale that certainly warrants, I think, a couple more seasons. I thought that was a great finale. Yeah.
It was. I mean, I've been saying, like, the opening, you know, that little opening voiceover bit was... The voiceover bit was fine. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not putting it down. But just the way they did the opening shots, regardless of the weird Last Supper thing...
I kind of liked that Last Supper shot. I was like,
I did, and I was like, it almost felt forced, the way they just kind of pulled back to it, like, oh, did you notice what we did?
Yeah, it wasn't subtle, I'll say that much. Yeah. And, especially with Dutch sitting there in the Jesus spot, I'm like, yeah, okay, I get you. I get what you're
right. But, it had that kind of funeral dirge moment.
Oh, see, now I want to look again to see who's occupying the Judas spot. Just in case. Just in case they decide to do something in the next couple seasons.
Yeah, interesting. But yeah, that was a great finale. It, you know, we definitely had payoffs galore for everyone from, you know, Torrin to Fancy to, you know, Pri and Gavin.
Yes.
We had a wedding to start the show.
Right.
And of course I really did enjoy the Anila and Johnny bit.
Yeah, that was pretty great. I have to say.
Straight down to Johnny not pulling the trigger because he knows that if he, you know, kills her, then
Dutch dies too.
Dutch dies. Yes. But like, he doesn't even try to shoot her into, like, stopping her. Like, he, there's that weird kind of, I don't really want to do this because it's freaking me out. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah, no, and you could tell, like, I thought, the tension in those kinds of scenes is Johnny, how aware is Johnny? Like, how perceptive is he? And the answer, of course, is he knows exactly what's going on.
Yeah, because that's what he does. Yeah.
But he'll still, like, it's still the, I'm going to touch you. It's like, this is going to be potentially really bad, but I'm just going to get in there anyway.
Oh, yeah, no, just straight down to the, I've been stabbed and my lung has collapsed. But let's just go anyway, you know? And one thing I do like is that it really was kind of like this apocalyptic, like, the world is ending level episode, like, for a lot of it. You know, the attacks from the Hull and the whole thing. Mm-hmm. You're just watching this war suddenly come, you know, to fruition after 9 other episodes.
Yeah. And you're still watching all the plans they've laid just go up in smoke, and them having to, like, right, improvise and adapt anyway.
But we've also been shown for a lot of episodes that that's what they do best.
Exactly. Yeah.
And yet, for all that, they never dropped the little side bits and the little fun.
Yeah, that was a...
And that's what makes the show, like, amazing to me.
It was a tight... tight as a duck's ass script, as they say.
Yes.
I don't know if they say that, but I just did.
I've never heard that, but I'll go with it. Yeah, no, just there were so many little character moments and so many little, you know, just side weird lines that were just exactly what you're tuning in for. You know, it's like they never lost the humanity of it.
Yeah.
Just to do, like, here's our big destructive episode. Like, they didn't fall down that well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they really could have. Like, it, I don't think anyone would have... We all would have been slightly disappointed, because that's not the show.
Yeah.
But it would have been understandable.
Like, I think so.
But I also do just like that at the end of the day, the answer is not we just kill people. The answer is we find a better solution.
Yes, exactly. No, yeah, I am.
You know,
and I love the fact that the solution at the end was, and I kind of saw it coming. Like I thought this is the only way this can go. It was with Dutch and Neela kind of forming an alliance to take down the real, like an even worse enemy.
I'll tell you, I had one idea that I thought was going to happen instead.
What's that?
And I was like, oh god, like if they do this, it's going to be weird, and I don't know if the show's going to work, but I'll trust them to make it work if they do it. Mm-hmm. Which is, I thought we were going to lose Dutch, but she was going to end up putting her memories into Anila, and we were going to have Anila Dutch next
That's
season.
Kind of what I thought might happen. I had that same idea, like because
right, they were building us that way. And then with the whole memory thing, they really do kind of light up this path
mm-hmm.
of look at the shiny thing. We might do the shiny thing, and then like no, the shiny thing actually is wrong. It's what a lot of shows would have done.
Yes, exactly. And I also, I mean, and that way you get to actually keep Dutch and Anila as two characters, which is a good thing. But I also thought that by sort of re-injecting Anila with her memories, her lost memories, it often comes down to something that they almost always show in Killjoys, which is that character is perspective. It's like who you are is determined often just by what you know at any given moment, and you know, and it always gives characters that second chance. So, because they didn't spend a lot of time making Anila sort of like a pure villain anyway. Like, they almost immediately began building up relationships, you know, with her and giving her a sort of a sympathetic pathway that you knew that she had to be figure in as not just a villain in the future seasons. So, and this is how they did it.
Yeah. No, and I do like it that, you know, they are kind of considering themselves sisters now.
Yes.
Because she even says, like, you know, you're named after our mother.
Yeah. Interesting.
So, you know, now they go off into the magical land and
to find the lady.
Start that yeah. fight. Who's already coming out into this land, so you know that we're going to get them both back.
Yes.
And it could just be one of these, we get, like, Dutch out here and Anila in there with Klein. And kind of fighting a war on two fronts, which saves on effects for having to deal both of them in the same place at the same time.
That's a good point.
I mean, it's horrible of me, but I'm like, how do we do this to save money?
Oh, no, I know. It's like, this show is not Orphan Black. We can't be, they're not going to do that kind of shooting schedule. But I, you know, I'm just wondering if they've mulled over whether to make the lady, like, also Hannah John Kamen, like, another iteration of her.
No, I think the lady is going to end up being their mother.
Yes, that's my guess, too.
Like it, I mean, it has to be.
But
right?
Another good reason for her to look like, you know.
Well, I think look-ish like. I mean, you know, Klein doesn't really look like either of them.
You raise a good point. You raise a really good point.
You know, I think it'd be good to have another actress.
I agree.
Just to bring in someone else who can really sell it.
Yeah.
You know.
No, I think.
Not that they couldn't, but you know what I mean.
Yes. Not that they couldn't. Yeah, I think no. I was really, really pleased to see that they got those two seasons. Because I mean, I don't. This Killjoy is just every episode just seems to like fine tune the show a little bit more and just get a little better. And like we talked about this last week, like lots of shows kind of have occasional woofers or like just off episodes. Like even my favorite shows have really bad episodes. Like, even a show with only a few episodes, like Firefly had a couple of really pretty bad episodes.
Sure, I'm like, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. had that one really bad episode.
Which one was that?
Granted, it was one in 7 years, but they had
true.
It.
They had a bad episode. Which one was the bad episode? I can't remember.
It was the flashback
episode. Oh, Jesus.
Where the timeline doesn't quite fit, and it's like they do it to show you this one little thing, essentially.
Yeah.
That wasn't actually even needed. Like, I cannot figure out, like, who thought that episode was a great idea. But it doesn't work. And it's, like, just it's the one episode that really just makes you go, wow, you guys only get, like, 10 to 12 a year. You whiffed. Like,
oh, that's
but, no, having 10 episodes a year really does let them, you know, cut it down and pare it down to something interesting.
Oh, exactly.
But again, as you point out, even shows that do that, you still get a bad episode.
Yeah.
No, but they don't. They, so,
as I say, they threatened to have one in the first season and did not, and they pulled it off. They so, yeah. I was.
Well, you know, my tradition is always the like a few weeks before the next season airs, I watch the previous season, just to reset everything up in my head. And I'm fairly sure that a couple months after season 5, I'm just going to do a whole rewatch of all 5 seasons. And it's weird that I'm like, I'm kind of already looking forward to that. Like, I want to see this whole picture. And it'll be sad when it's done, but we're going to get a whole picture.
Yeah, it's kind of like a lot of people on I know on Twitter are doing a... because the tonight, because we are recording on a Sunday, tonight is the finale of... 2-hour finale of Twin Peaks. And a lot of people are just watching... I think some dedicated souls are watching the whole shebang, but most people are just watching the return, the episodes.
Yeah.
And so it's... I've been told it's actually worth it. The way the structure of the show is actually revealed when you rewatch.
I'm sure it is if you,
if
like,
you like Twin Peaks.
Peaks.
And I know you're not into Twin Peaks.
I've never gotten into
it. I am a fan.
But one thing I did want to talk about really quick about the whole Dark Matter Killjoys thing was I've seen a few people. I've seen a lot of people who are upset about Dark Matter, and that again, understandable. But I've seen a few people start attacking Killjoys because of it.
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen any of that.
Where, like, some of the people on Dark Matter, like, showrunner, like, down from Dark Matter have been like, please don't do that. Yeah. Like, we are happy for them. They deserve it. Just because we didn't get one doesn't mean that, like, they got ours.
Exactly. That's, I mean, there's your, so one of the, some of the lousier aspects of fandom. Is, you know, they viewing everything as kind of a zero sum game and setting up Killjoys in opposition.
I mean, there was apparently some like word going around in some circles that like part of the problem was that, you know, Dark Matter fans were also pushing Killjoys. So it's like, no, more people watching means more people watching both shows. That's not a bad thing.
Exactly. Well, I think also. The sensibilities of Dark Matter and Killjoys are just very different, and which is part of the reason why we enjoy Killjoys more than Dark Matter. It aligns with our taste a bit better, but I don't know. It's
right.
So I think that looking at a show like another show that seems superficially similar, but is just overall has a very different sensibility. Some fans might, in their butthurtness, in their sorrow, might decide that the Killjoy's sensibility is like an enemy of theirs, so.
Well, there's a thing, and I'm not saying this is why some people don't like Killjoys and they like Dark Matter, but it kind of is. I think we've talked about this before. Like, when I was a kid, I could not stand Star Trek IV.
The Undiscovered Country? No, wait, that's in the 5.
Yeah, that's 6. the whale one.
Yeah, sorry. It's one yeah, I mean. Sorry, 4, yeah, the one where they go back to the past, yes. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, like, I've watched it again as an adult, and I absolutely adore it. And so I started to piece together why. Like, what changed? And for me, what it was that, you know, when I was a kid, and I think for a lot of people in, you know, age groups that, like, from, God knows, like, older than either of us down through, like, I don't know, people in their 30s now, liking this stuff when you were growing up was still kind of sneered at a little bit. And so especially as like a kid, especially when you're younger, you have trouble with it being made fun of, even if it's itself
exactly.
making fun of it.
Yeah.
Because it feels like, but I love this thing and no one takes me seriously because of it. Why can't, you know, the show has to take itself seriously. Like they have to give me that much. And again, I understand the reflex. I really do. But no. And you know, and for like something like Star Trek where it's like it never took itself that seriously. That's why that movie
exactly.
works so well.
Remember the Star Trek episode with Terry Garr when they actually go back in time? I mean I have a feeling that Star Trek IV is loosely inspired by that. And I thought that was like one of my favorite Star Trek episodes because it really at that point for all its sort of like sort of space operatic sort of notes and pretensions, it really knew how to enjoy itself.
Right. But I think that some of that, like, we have to take this sort of seriously, especially with science fiction fans and especially with TV shows. Yeah. Because there was so much, like, beep, boop, I am a robot in aluminum foil, you know. Like, it, and people don't take science fiction stuff seriously. I mean, I know it infects comic fans where it's like, you still to this day will get articles about comics that start with, like, biff, pow, bam, you know, it's like, and so you just kind of instantly feel that gut shot of just like, why can't you take this thing seriously at all, ever? And so I think part of that kind of hit killed you, yeah, a little bit.
I think so.
That it's having too much fun. It shouldn't be allowed to have that much fun. Shouldn't they be taking this seriously? And it's like, A, they are. Like, when Killjoy gets serious, it gets damn serious. But also, they fucking laugh. You know, I'm a wizard. It, you know.
No, that's, I think that's exactly, you've nailed it, Saw.
Yeah, it's, so I think that is part of the fandom issue right now, is that, like, they feel like the serious thing was taken from them. Like, the serious thing is called The Expanse,
right.
A, and it's glorious, yes, and still here. You know, no, Killjoy is outright funny, and that's okay. It can still be a good serious drama as well. We have the technology. You know, this is not like the days before. I when I say I don't know if you remember, I don't mean like, you know, did you live through it? But, you know, back in the days of like Lord of the Rings, like in the, you know, the early days of a lot of genre stuff, and even just fiction in general, way before the 60s, where you didn't intercut plots. Mm-hmm. The actual term for a story that intercut plots was a confusion. Like, seriously, that's what they were called. Which is why in the Baroque trilogy, by the way, Neal Stephenson did title the second book,
yes,
The Confusion, because it was one.
Right.
And it was taking place in the period where the term was invented. It was a very subtle little jab. And by subtle, I mean not at all. But it's why, like, Lord of the Rings, in the second book, you get, here's Sam, and I'll walk through the fucking bullshit.
You don't cut back to Helm's
Deep. And then also you get Helm's Deep.
You don't cut to Helm's Deep. You read the whole damn battle sequence. Beginning to end. That was not the best part of Lord of the Rings, by the way. Just saying.
No.
Tolkien's battle sequences, not exciting.
But that's the thing, it's like...
Anyway.
No. But still, like, he would have benefited from making it a confusion.
I think it would be good. But it's a style that we now... And I think part of that might be purely, like, with television at the time, might be pure technology, just with editing, like, with the ability to, like, make edits, and, like, how much time you had to actually edit things together. And, like, often... Like, editing, like, with videotape or strips of film, I mean, it was a much more intensive process. Now we've got non-linear editing.
Right. I mean, and in fiction, you just, again, they just didn't trust the reader to be able to keep up. And that went away, but it really didn't fully go away until, like, the 60s, which is nuts when you think about it. Because these days, if you don't do that, it's like, that's a bad sign. But we have the technology. We can merge genres. We can merge tones.
Yeah.
We're good at this. We're okay.
Actually, there's I can never pronounce his name. Middleman creator Javi Grillo Marwak. He has a book of essays called "Shoot This First," I think. And one of the essays is actually about editing technology. You know, and the shift from linear to nonlinear, you know, digital editing, and how it fundamentally changed the way we tell stories on television and the movies, because suddenly it's so much easier to produce. Well, it's so much easier for to make a confusion, to confuse people.
Well, I mean, and there's certainly things like, you know, you couldn't do certain things. I'm not even talking like Orphan Black level. But there's certain things you couldn't do on lower budget shows like Killjoys, and have them look good, and so people would stay away from them sometimes because they would look crappy, that now you can get away with, and it lets you tell different stories.
I remember one of the things about, I mean, even like in the early 2000s when Firefly and Battlestar Galactica came out, one of the things that they really benefited from were special effects in which you didn't have to lock down the camera, and you could actually have like integrate CGI into like handheld roving camera work on a television budget.
Oh yeah, no, Firefly was one of the first people to do that. Firefly was one of the first people to actually pull off.
They were able, I mean, being
and then Battlestar started to do it.
I remember,
you know,
when I first watched Battlestar Galactica, and I was sort of like, oh, they're just ripping off Firefly. Because so much of it, like with the zoom, with the snap zooms and whip pans in space, I was like, I mean, it looked great, but I was like, that's just Firefly. Don't know what everybody's talking about.
Yeah, exactly. No, everyone stole from that.
Oh, exactly.
Everyone did, and they were right to.
And I think that's why some people will come up with that complete bullshit opinion of Firefly as Farscape done right. What they mean is Farscape is Firefly just has better special effects, or at least more particular standards. Yeah,
better computer.
Yeah,
special
precisely.
Effects.
Better CGI, because Farscape was a thing.
And I think, Farscape's in that person of interest era in a different way. Farscape's kind of that bridge between the older science fiction shows and the newer ones, whether people like it or not. You know, there's so much now that we take, you know, just take for granted that Farscape was doing. By the time, it's just like, wait, what? I mean, they actually got in trouble going into their fourth season for being too serialized.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
Three.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, it's like now that's expected. So you could see like where it was just on that bubble. And just like we've discussed, like Person of Interest, like it was kind of half of one, half
Very
of another
much.
Era of TV. And that kind of makes it fascinating.
I know. Yeah, you can see two different ideas like vying, one sort of hanging on, one sort of struggling to be born. And it's really fascinating. It's funny because I think, if I recall correctly, Angel the series, Angel the series, Angel, the television show Angel, actually got in trouble for the exact same thing in season 4. The storytelling became completely serialized. There was maybe one standalone episode in the entire season, or maybe a couple. But everything was part of one overarching story, and the network just hated it, like it was the WB at the time, or whatever version of it.
Well, because like it's syndication, it makes for a huge problem.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to follow it at all. And I think it's syndicated, but I mean, you know, nowadays we're much more, we've become a nation of binge watchers, so we expect these sort of ongoing stories.
Right, and yeah, it's so how we tell them, how we're able to tell them, it all just changes under our feet. And there's always going to be whatever genre it is, whatever technology or advancement there is, that bubble show that's trying to innovate. And I think generally will get sort of, you know, hardcore fans, but often lost in a shuffle.
I agree. And then maybe come back later. The funny thing about, I always thought of a Person of Interest, is that it didn't show up on Netflix for so long. Yeah, it was.
Really?
Everybody was kind of curious about that because it was a show that would really benefit. Like, I mean, the part of the problems with ratings.
Yeah, but it was.
What's
it
that?
Was,
I think
it's
CBS.
They held out for a lot of that stuff for years because they wanted to do their own streaming thing, and I think they kept trying to figure it out and then didn't and screwed everything up.
As CBS's want to do. It is the network for old people like watching police procedurals. So.
Yeah, I mean, these people are like, what do you mean I got to watch this on my computer? Is that through the AOL?
Can I get a free CD of it?
Do I have to Bing it?
I still love it when people say Bing instead of Google. I don't know why. It should not be funny anymore, but I still love hearing it.
It really, I think it's the name more than anything.
Exactly. Huh. I just love, like, what's the new Microsoft, like, their little, the newest version of Internet Explorer. It's like Microsoft Edge.
Edge.
I'm like, could you look any less cool? No, you could not.
Yeah, Microsoft is. I mean, for all their install base, and God knows I'm using, you know, Windows 10 here, but they really are kind of like the CBS of computers. It's God help them. They'll put out some great product that you'll appreciate the hell out of. But man,
not cool. They cannot help it. That's all right. We love you anyway, Microsoft. You old bastards.
Out of like my, you know, three options, it's the best one for me for stuff.
Right now.
You
know, when Apple comes up with an enterprise solution, based on multiple drivers that you can, you know, mod yourself a lot, then fine.
Yeah. But let's see, what else is going on? I was talking to you before we started about playlist stuff.
Tell us briefly about your playlist stuff for those who want a behind-the-scenes thing.
So when I write novels, I use music in two different ways when I write novels especially. One is I have a playlist, and the other is in my plotting, and they're used very differently. And ignoring the plotting end of things, because that's weird and doesn't make sense out of my brain to anyone on Earth. I keep trying to explain it. Maybe one day I'll manage to. But I make playlists for my novels. And sometimes for, like, solo comic pitches. That, you know, just try to capture the sound of it. Now, I don't like using soundtracks because, for me, if I hear, like, oh, here's this great bit of John Williams' score, it's going to make me think of the movie scene there. And some people like that because they want to hit that tone of the movie scene. For me, it makes me try to write that scene.
Yep.
Whereas I want to write my own scene.
You just need like a mood or an energy to go with it. Not...
Right. Like I need to know what the sound of the story is. And I don't mind lyrics. My rule is, again, no soundtracks, but also no jazz, because I stop writing and listen to the jazz. But, you know, I grew up in like the late 70s and 80s, so I'm used to ignoring the radio. That was a thing, right? You put on the radio, you're doing your homework, you're doing whatever, you're not listening to the lyrics, but you hear
exactly.
them. So, you know, I have no problem with songs with lyrics, thank God. Trying to find the noise of a novel is really kind of hard. Because it's a playlist, like, I might have, like, oh, well, this song is for this character, but I don't know when it's going to come up in the playlist, like, you know, and the playlist for the book I'm finishing now is 8 hours long? 8 hours and 37 minutes long right now. And of course, the problem is, like, I'll listen to it while I'm plotting, although I will turn it off because I also do need different music for plotting, but that's, again, a different weirdness. But I listen to the soundtrack obsessively after a certain point, especially when I'm working on the book. Because I key that certain noise of that book to the book. And so it's like, okay, well, I'm done with another project, done with the day job for the day, whatever it is. You know, go, like, work out for a bit or just sit here and think for a while, whatever, and I'll put it on the playlist. And I'll put it on while I'm writing. Because after a while, you know, that certain set of sounds just kind of coalesces to help my brain switch gears. So I just started this weekend putting together the playlist for this new book. And, of course, in the early days, it gets very long. You know, like right now, this one's at almost 16 hours. And it might stay there because I have to listen to it for so long. Like, we're talking months where I listen to this thing obsessively. The longer they are, the better off I am because I get dreadfully sick of them. If you have a playlist that's only like 3 or 4 hours long, man, you're gonna be listening to that shit.
You're gonna get pretty tired of like the tune you thought was great when you first put it on there. I get that.
Yeah, there are certain bands. Like after I finish this, I'm like in the last day and a half of this novel. I'm just doing like cleanup at this point, but I'm still putting on the soundtrack occasionally, put my head back in. And there's like a couple of bands where I'm just like, I am not listening to anything by these people for like a year.
Right.
Like, just, they're dead to me now, because...
You just can't...
But yeah, no, so it's, you know, it started off with, like, taking a trip to the music store yesterday. And, you know, dropping, like, $100 on new CDs. And sometimes dropping $100 on new CDs for stuff like that I want. Don't get me wrong. Like, none of it's like stuff I don't want anyway. But it's like, but for this novel, it's like there's three tracks on it I'm going to pull. You know? I'll still listen to the rest of the album other times and, you know, put on other playlists and all that. But for this, so I just need these three tracks.
So you're not able to do, say, a Spotify playlist or just not, you just can't get all you want? Okay.
I probably could. I could probably do Spotify. I could, you know, I don't tend to do much streaming of music almost ever. Because I have literally, like, I don't even know. I could find out. I don't know. I have some absurd amount of, I have like 1,000-odd CDs in terms of individual albums as far as iTunes is
concerned.
You know, it's about 40 days of music. You know, 14,000 individual tracks.
That'll keep you if
tracks,
you ever end
roughly.
Up on, like, Noah's Ark or something.
Almost 15. Well, right, and that's the thing. Is because I am so obsessed about music, I would rather buy the music because I have different playlists for different things, and I listen to music, but I don't need to stream because, like, the main playlist that I listen to a lot, like when we're in the car or if we're on the patio or whatever, is 8.5 days long. So I don't need to stream because.
Fair enough. Personally, what I like doing is I like to watch music on YouTube and then torrent the albums and then complain that all the music sucks these days. That's my strategy. That's how I'm supporting the industry. Okay, no, I actually buy music.
There you go. But no, it's like I know. I know. No one thinks that you're serious. But no, I realize that I could, like, go to Amazon or you know, I don't buy from iTunes personally, but iTunes or Amazon or whatever you buy your individual tracks from, and just buy, like, oh, well, I only need these three tracks. I realize I could do that and probably save some money. But because I don't know what tracks I really want, like I said, like, this is, like, you know, almost 16 hours long right now, this playlist. I'm going to listen to it for a couple days while I'm kind of gearing up for the book and pull a lot of stuff out and add a lot of other stuff.
What you're buying is, like, variety and surprise. You're buying all the things that you don't generally get when your options are too narrowly defined by digital media. You know what I mean? No.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, I'll buy an album where I'm like, I know I need, like, these four songs off of it. Like, obviously. To my head, I'm just like, obviously this. But, like, the other, like, I, you know, picked up a Stevie Wonder thing.
Oh, sweet.
Actually, I picked up two Devo albums I didn't have. And I think out of the 30-odd tracks from that, I'm going to use, like, maybe 10. But trust me, all of them will be on that main playlist I have. That I listen to. Like, so that's the thing.
I'm up for a Devo-influenced novel. I think that would be great.
There's a lot of disco right now. I'm just scrolling through. Like, right now, there's a lot of disco. There's a lot of the Kills. If you people don't know the Kills and you need to write things that are just kind of mean or just kind of heavy action type sequences, listen to the Kills. They're very good for that. There's, you know, some Stevie Wonder, a bunch of Devo, MC 900 Foot Jesus, some Ladytron, some Gaga in here, Run DMC, Beastie Boys, Imperial Drag. See, now you're seeing what this book sounds like. There's some Parliament, there's a bunch of Metric, some old Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five tracks in here, Eurythmics, some early Firewater.
I don't know Firewater.
Bird and the Bee. Oh, I should introduce you to Firewater sometime. The Bird and the Bee, a little bit of Van Halen, some really early Soul Coughing, some Queen, some Prince, some Len, a bunch of B-52s.
I want to go dig out my old Soul Coughing albums now, because, I mean, they were, I mean, for a time, I can't remember who the main guy is from Soul Coughing. Thank you, Mike Doty. Yeah, but
Mike Doty?
Early Soul Coughing is just fantastic stuff.
Well, back when Ruby Room first dropped, it was like 93. And I remember this because I had just gone off to college, just moved to Boston, and I'd also just gotten online. And the little New York-based forum thing, because back then, that's what everyone did. You just dialed into this service, your service, or whatever it was, and you had your local forums. Right. And that's how I found the album, was a bunch of people in New York were just obsessed with the album, and it became, like, our thing. So I must have listened to Ruby Vroom, like, seriously, like, about once a day for about a year. And I still love it.
Yeah, remember, there was a time when you could walk into, like, a room full of people you didn't really know, and you could just say something like, get onto the bus, and somebody would respond with, you know, that's going to take you back to Beelzebub.
Right.
Or and whatever else. I mean, it was just, it was kind of like a, because not everybody listened. There was only a small group of people that listened to it, but it was sort of a thing. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah,
great shibboleth. Great marker of cool shibboleth for a while. Certain circles.
So yeah, I mean, you can see like this album, it's an urban album. It's a very urban, the setting for this book is very much the strange city. And so I needed like sounds of urban environments, not in that like weird racist, actual we mean black cities. People way, but, but actual cities. And so again, you end up with like a bunch of funk, a bunch of disco and hip hop and things like Soul Coughing. Because that's what cities tended to sound like.
I'm just now stuck on the notion of you pitching the novel like, it's a novel of smooth urban cool.
But, right, like that's the problem.
Oh, of course.
But that's where like Devo comes in.
And
you know, the occasional like Ladytron and all that. Like there's, so, but again, like it's just, it just building this playlist is something that will take like a month to finalize. Which is usually take about 3 months to plot a novel and set up for it. And part of the setting up is winnowing this playlist to the right shape. Because if it's wrong, it ain't going to work. It'll throw me in weird loops. And then I do tend to keep them. Like, forever. I don't know why. I don't ever listen
but
to them again.
They're like a marker. They're an archive of a particular state of mind and so on.
Yeah.
Right, sort of like, you know, authors keeping notes. You're sort of keeping a sonic archive of the creation of the novel.
Yeah, this was I have some abandoned projects, like even comic stuff. So I'm just like, I'm never going to touch this thing again, but I'll keep the early draft of the soundtrack. I never finished them because
that's cool. I really like that idea. I think I actually wonder how many other authors do that, but like work with soundtracks in the same way. I mean, I know that like you'll listen to music. But that sort of particular dedication and curation.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people will be like, well, here's like a Spotify playlist for the book.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like 18 tracks type of thing. Because they curate down to like, well, here's this song for this character, here's a song for this moment, and they're building like a movie soundtrack, which I understand. But
you're going for...
You know, for me, it's just, I need an overall tone. I need like a sonic environment that this book can live in, and that has to be bigger than one album. Also because I would kill someone if I had to listen to the same like eight tracks for 3 months straight. Because there are times where like seriously like this last book where I'm having trouble with the book and I just don't let myself listen to any other playlist. Like this is what I got. This is the only sound I'm letting into my head to try to keep myself centered. If it was only like eight tracks, man, I'd be angry.
Hey, Adam, want to listen to the heavy? Fuck off! Oh, no, I...
Well, it's funny, because, like, the heavy ended up on, like, two different, like, on the novel playlist, and also, like, on, like, a playlist I use, like, on the treadmill a lot and all this, and so I kind of, like, had to step away from them for a while. And that is the problem. It's like, you know, you have to resist the urge to be like, I really like this song, because it's, like, a new song that you really like, so I'm going to put it on the playlist because I want to hear it. It's like, no, you can come back. It's okay. But I'm also the type of person, because I have all this music, that like I forget stuff. And so I will, every few months, just scroll through like albums and artists, and I'll be like, I don't remember this, and just listen to that album a couple times. Like, I forgot I own this. I haven't thought of this band in years. Which is why I don't bother streaming, because
right.
I have so much goddamn music.
That's great. That's cool. I like I like that whole idea. That's I like the whole process.
Yeah, no, it's fun. I mean, to be fair, I did make a huge mistake with Endless Sky, which is the book I'm just closing up this weekend, the sequel to Starry Deep, which is instead of copying the Starry Deep playlist and then changing it around, adding new stuff, taking out some stuff that wasn't relevant,
right?
Because it's in the same world, so you need the same sonic base. I just changed the original soundtrack. So I kind of lost what the sound of the first book is. a little bit, you know, which I do kind of regret in that, like, archive keeping the thing there sort of way.
By the by, our new cat is just, we let him out into the apartment today. Yeah, Raccoon Jabberwocky.
Yeah, Raccoon, your new cat.
Morgan. and he's, we named him Augie, I think, after, Saul Bellow's Adventures of Augie March. It is a good name, and it does give us the opportunity to pet him and go, Augie, 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 as, you know, when the mood strikes. But yeah, he's been, I'm sure people love listening to cat tales, but he's been just an awesome, awesome cat. He's getting along surprisingly well with the other three. We kept him in our spare room, and we brought the cats in one at a time. Like, we started with Oscar, who's like the sort of the alpha in the whole pecking order in this apartment, and then Onion, and then Lula, just to get them used to the whole thing. And then we just kind of decided to let him out today and see how it went. And,
of course.
You know, it turns out he just basically his tactic is to peek around a corner and then, like, rocket past them at high speed so they just don't even have time to get angry. They're just like, what? And then they get tired of trying to, like, hiss at him. So, and they've already stopped. Yeah. Bothering.
Right.
Well, yes.
I've told you about our patio cat, yes?
Kirk. I did not know it was Kirk.
Well, we don't know because he obviously hasn't owned. There are a lot of neighborhood cats here, and a lot of people have indoor-outdoor cats. Like, ours are, you know, Panther Watson are very much indoor cats. People have indoor-outdoor cats, and, like, you can tell. Like, you look at this cat, and you're like, no, he's well-groomed. He's, you know, he obviously lives somewhere in the neighborhood, but he's allowed out, especially at night. And, like, a year or so ago, we were sitting out on the patio, and this cat comes up to us, and it's like, you should be petting me now. And, like, hopped up into a lap. Like, we'd never seen this cat before in our lives. And we're in the middle of a conversation, of course, we're hanging out on the patio, and all of a sudden this cat comes by. So we named him Kirk after Gilmore Girls, because he just interrupts any conversation, makes it all about him. And, like, Kirk will occasionally try to follow us inside, and he disappeared for, like, a year. We're like, I wonder what happened to Kirk. And he came back the other day, and Watson gets pissed. Like, if you pet Kirk, and, like, 10 minutes is all it takes, but if you just, like, pet Kirk and then go inside and Watson smell your hands, he starts crying. Like, it really sounds like he's just screaming
no.
Just
not a fan.
It took him forever to use it. Like, he was bored because he didn't have another cat to play with, and we're working from home, so we can't play with him, and he'd get upset. So that's why we got Pants when we first moved. And as much as he wanted someone to hang out with, like, just so... still. Occasionally, it's just like, get the fuck away from me.
Yeah, we're expecting some of that. Lula is the least happy about this new guy. Lula's basic attitude is just stay on the other side of the apartment. And, you know, that's about it. Although I think even she has decided to, like, stop bothering because he just keeps running back and forth. That's his whole MO.
Yeah. Well, it's like, fair you know, enough. Pants never comes into my office if Watson is here.
Ah, yes.
Like, my office is his spot, apparently. And, like, even I'll come in and she'll be sitting in my window because I'll have the window open and she'll sit in my windowsill and I'll come into the office and she'll leave. And I'm like, I don't care. And she's like, no, if you're in here, he might come in, and then he's going to get pissed at me, like, I'm just leaving. You know, it's just... It is kind of adorable, though, because we'll catch them, like, curling up next to each other and being, like, snuggly. And if they hear us at all, they just, like, look up and watch them move over. Like, I don't like her, you shut up.
I wasn't snuggling. Go away.
don't look at me.
Oh, my God. Just, freaking cats.
He is such a jealous baby.
Yeah. Anyway. Getting close to the hour here. I think I was going to briefly mention something about Taylor Swift. Just because it was something it was a story that I saw because, you know, with her, you know, Look What You Made Me Do song, and also dropping a new single preview during like a Florida State Seminoles football commercial. I mean, give me a fucking break. because, you know, it's the Seminoles basically have, like, the chief Osceola, I think, you know, riding out in full gear and dropping a spear. Just, like, completely racist bullshit that they should know better about. Although apparently they say it's okay because they got the naming rights from the Seminole Tribal Council, which is not the same thing as Seminole Nation. But the Tribal Council is like a Florida-like company that, or group that owns a bunch of casinos and stuff and licenses out their name. So anyway, that's a whole other story. But the thing is, the Taylor Swift thing is she's partnered with Ticketmaster. It's Taylor Swift Tix, T-I-X,
oh, yes.
Powered by Ticketmaster Verified Fan. And I guess the Verified Fan program is it's a bit of software that the Ticketmaster developed in order to like sort of distinguish, like, with purchases, for, like, genuine ticket purchasers from, like, scalpers and bots, basically. So it's kind of a good idea because you don't want, you know, scalpers showing up and, like, buying all the tickets or, you know, or a bunch of bots. So the idea behind the Verified Fan program, right, I thought was pretty good. But partnering this with Swift's thing, basically, it basically gives you better access to Taylor Swift tickets if you do certain things, like if you tweet about Taylor Swift or Instagram about Taylor Swift, or if you buy her album. But they're fans, and these are like teen girls, like obsessive young teenage girls quite often. Like, some of them have been kind of subtly encouraged to buy the album multiple times. Not to get tickets, but to get a better,
right,
earlier chance at getting a ticket. Like, in some cases, up to 13 times, like, for pre-orders.
Right, where what they seem to also, of course, build into that is that scalpers know that they'll be able to resell those tickets,
yeah,
for way more than the 13 copies of the album's worth. So they're not actually solving a problem,
yep,
so much as just creating one that makes them,
yes,
way more money.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, you can't.
It's
here,
terrible.
I'm just reading this
just
on
terrible.
The Consequence of Sound site. You can literally, like, there's a site with a progress bar showing, like, how far along you are in your chance to, like, get further up the line for Taylor Swift Tix. And yeah, like, buying the album multiple times is an actual, like, progress marker. So it is. I mean, it's
disgusting.
It's utterly unscrupulous. It's exploiting fandom. I mean, and I just think I don't care about how,
yeah,
self-serving and ridiculous her music may be on this album, because with that last song it obviously is. But exploiting her own fans just seems like just really crappy behavior. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's
And
that
I'm
is
basically
not a good
gonna
thing,
go buy a bunch of Kanye West,
to put it mildly.
And, just despite Taylor Swift at this point. That's what I encourage everybody to buy lots of Kanye West, just so you're not buying Taylor Swift, and just, you know, tweet that out.
Well, I say just if everyone ignores it. No, I'm serious though. If enough people ignore it, then those better access things don't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
But
what
I mean, she's leveraging
like that
obsessive part, most obsessive part of her fandom, who are going to buy their her album, you know, or pre-order it 13 times and, like, tweet endlessly.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it's, I don't know, just taking advantage of young people like that just seems really, really unscrupulous. Yeah.
Well, taking advantage of any fandom like that is just...
Precisely.
Yeah, it works against
the
idea of having
fans. I mean, you do get obsessive and weird things, but, you know, there is some age does give you some measure of critical judgment where you can say, well, maybe this is a bit much. But if you're 13 years old and, you know, you don't have that critical judgment, you're gonna buy those albums, which, I don't know,
right,
hopefully not. Hopefully people will think better of it. Realistically, it will work. Yes.
Realistically, yeah, it'll work.
Anyway, that's my railing. And I guess next time we podcast, I will talk a bit about the film Valerie and Her Week of Wonders, which is one of the weirdest. Well, I guess it's kind of like a Euro exploitation film, but it's very tame by those standards, and much more artful than the usual. So that's worth a bit of talk, I think.
All right. Well, and just if people don't, which why would they know yet? We probably won't have a show next week because I will be at Rose City Comic Con, where if you're in Portland, you can come see me
And
at
I have to
table
say, I know from experience that
005.
hanging out with you in person is even better than podcasting or listening to a podcast of you. You are a
I am
fucking delight,
delightful.
Sir.
And also, very modest. But if you're in Portland or can get down to Portland for a day, the show is a lot of fun. Actually, I really do enjoy the con. And DJ will be there, and we'll be sitting with Valentine Barker as we always try to. So there'll be good art. Me and DJ will sign stuff.
Ooh.
We'll tell you
That's
terrible,
awesome.
terrible stories.
Well, cookies. Yeah, I mean that should
I'll
bring
have
people,
cookies.
if nothing else. Cookies will do it.
Yeah.